winter.
Hello and welcome to What We Do in the Winter. This is the 76th episode in the series of podcasts from the Isles of Mull, Iona, Ulva, Gomatra, Erid, and Little Colonsay. I'm Alistair Satchell. I live outside of Dervig in the north of Mull, and I'll be your host today. Hello to you. I hope this finds you well and happy wherever and whenever you may be. This episode is a conversation with Ailey Young. Originally from Penmore in northwest Mull, Ailey lives in Loch Don, where she was the head of Loch Donhead Primary for many years. Our conversation brings life in the north of Mull during the Second World War to life, so much so that we'll hear what the infamous Lord Haw-Haw, Nazi propagandist on Germany Calling, had to say to the people of Tobermory one evening. Ailey has tales of herself and her father, her training in Edinburgh at Murray House, her work as a teacher in St Neots, Muirhouse, and of course here on Mull. Ailey and I spoke in December in the midst of a great big storm, which you'll hear in the back of our chat. Before I hand over to Ailey, I just want to say a massive thank you to all of you who contributed to the recent fundraiser for What We Do in the Winter over Ko-fi. I really appreciate your support on this. Thank you all so much. As I record, the sun has come back and it feels like we're getting into a proper spring, which is very, very much appreciated after a very long and dark winter. I'll be back at the end with a wee bit more, but it is now with the greatest of pleasure that I hand you over to Ailey Young. Who are you?
Well, I'm Ailey Young, and I'm actually a Mullagh, a rare breed. I was born on the island in Penmore Mill nearly 84 years ago. And that's it. I've lived in Loch Don since 1968. Came to live when I took over the headship at the school. And I've lived here most of my life, really. The rest of the time I was away trying to get a bit of an education and doing teaching as well in Edinburgh. And I taught in the Borders and I taught in England for a short time.
Oh.
In the south of Cambridge at a place called St Neots.
Right.
And I'm still in touch with some of the people from there. That was a way back in the very early 60s. So
that's fabulous. Wow.
I haven't taught abroad. I would have liked to have gone abroad, but didn't get round to it because I met my husband and in Edinburgh when I was teaching there, or was I still at college? I can't remember. I think I was at college and then teaching, and then we got married and I got this job in Mull, which brought me back, which was very good. You know, I was extremely lucky to get, you know, a reasonable job here and that I could earn good money. And my husband got, he had been an electronic engineer with Ferranti.
All right.
Which was, coming here was fortuitous because Ferranti went to the wall when all the electronic business went off to America.
Yes.
So he was offered a job as an engineer on the roads and he took it up, you know, he could do it quite easily. So that's what he did. Right. So he was earning a bit of money. And we were able to survive that way.
That's fantastic.
So that's who I am.
Thank you. We're done. That's great. St Neots. Aye, so how did you like going to Cambridge after being here? What was that area like after? That's quite rural around there, isn't it?
St Neots was a town probably at that time, probably about the size of Oban,
right.
I would think at least. In fact, it had, not that I was in all of them, but it had 42 pubs.
That's a night out.
Yeah.
That's a couple of nights out. Yeah.
That's right. No, it was quite enjoyable and I quite enjoyed my time there.
Hmm.
Again, it was quite hard work. The head teacher that was in charge, it was a private school.
Right.
You had to present there every morning with exactly what you were going to do. You had to write everything out the night before and present her with this work the next morning. And she signed it. She made sure that, you know, everything was being done. It was quite strict.
Very strict.
Because, I mean, you don't have that in the state schools. You don't have to waltz into an office and present the teacher, you know, the head teacher with a document of what you're going to do that day.
Yeah.
But it was a good training ground.
I guess it gives you a vocabulary of exercises that you can use straight away.
Well, that's true.
And do you think that it worked for the young people, that kind of approach? Well, we'll talk more about mull things in a second, but do you think, did that listen to the young learner at all, do you think, that approach?
I don't know that it made any difference, to be honest.
Really?
No, I mean, you did go through the all that you had to do, but no, I don't think it made any difference really, because, well, when you taught here, you did that yourself, you know, every teacher had to have a plan, you know, and get on with it, but not have to go in at 8:30 in the morning and present it, you know, to somebody else.
Rubber stamp it, yeah.
So that was the difference, but no, I quite enjoyed my time down there. Some things were difficult because the English people there made out that they couldn't make out my accent.
What?
Quite a lot.
Sorry,
and
miss,
said,
I cannot understand you.
Are you a Geordie? But I couldn't make out the people that had come up from London and were, what do you call these people, Cockneys?
Yeah,
they were very difficult to understand as well. But anyway, we got there, we managed to understand one another. So that was it. But no, I quite enjoyed my time there.
The weather's beating down something rotten outside, it's quite
Isn't
extraordinary.
It? Yeah, of course it's that time of year.
Yeah, the storms, yeah. Let's come back to Mull then. You were born in Penmore Mill. I've already talked to your brother Ian, who's a very, very close and dear friend.
He'll have given you all that, Jane.
He's given me a good whack, but you're a few years older than Ian, am I right in saying that?
I'm 7 years older.
So you've got other memories that, you know, from
yes,
your
Yes, well, aunt. That's perfectly true. Things that Ian didn't have any knowledge of. For example, the war, you know. I can remember that quite well because, I mean, I was 5 when the war ended in 45.
Of course.
So I could remember what was going on during the war. And Tobermory was quite famous during the war. It was a naval base and you had all the sailors. And my mother was teaching in Tobermory for a short time.
Right.
And during, I wasn't at school. My father had to go and work at, he was too old to be called up, so, because there was a gap in their ages, he was about 8 or 9 years older than my mother, but he had to go and work on the aerodrome at Tyree, and my mother taught in Tobermory, but I can still remember the sailors marching up and down in what is now the school sports field.
Oh yeah.
And there were wrens as well.
Oh gosh.
Yes, it was, and you know, the place was abuzz with all this business of seaplanes coming in and frigates, and there was a considerable presence in Tobermory of all that. So I remember hearing later on that the Germans, of course, got to know that Tobermory was a naval base, and one night, I think it was a guy called Lord Haw, I don't know what his real name was, but he was one of the top brass in Germany. He said over the radio, such as the radios were in those days, I believe we've got no bread in Tobermory tonight, so we might come and visit you. Things like this, which were quite scary, you know.
He was the voice of the other side. He was genuinely an evil, evil character.
Yeah, so I believe.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
And we had a guy who was in the Navy then, who was, I think he was later connected to, because he wrote a book, was it Tom Baker? Baker was his second name anyway. And I think he worked for the BBC for a while. I don't know if you heard of him.
No,
he did write a book about, and Tobermory was largely in it because he was stationed there.
I know there was the book The Terror of Tobermory is one of the books.
That's
Is that, that
he wrote about the Terror. Aye. The Terror was the, what do you call the guy that's in charge of?
Admiral.
Well, there's another name, but too, but yeah.
Fleet Commander.
Probably.
Yeah.
I don't know, but I can just remember all that, you know, which is quite remarkable, really, you know, that there's still people around that can, somebody around anyway that can still remember what was going on.
Yeah. That's extraordinary.
There's not many of us now, though.
Indeed, yeah,
but and then I had to go and stay in Glasgow with an aunt during the war because my mother took quite ill and she was in the Western Hospital in Glasgow, and not during my time, but just before I went to stay with my aunt, the house opposite was bombed. It was quite scary. It was flattened, and there was one young woman, I think a teenager, killed actually, but the rest escaped, they were okay. So that was out in Shawland at Grantley Street. So that was quite an experience. You know, even as a child, you got the feeling, you know, that things were not right, you know, and they had the big balloons.
Barrage balloons, wow.
Yes, above the city.
Wow.
To stop the Germans possibly landing or bombing.
Yeah.
Of course, they did bomb Clydebank.
Massively so, yeah.
Badly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The sugar works got done as well, I believe. As well
is
as
that
in,
right?
At Greenock, I think they, or I think somewhere around there, there was tales of the colours of the fire, the sugar burning, just extraordinary.
Yes. Well, anyway, I remember quite a bit about that, really, as a child, you know, the fear, you know, that something awful might happen, but it didn't, fortunately, and then my mother got better and we came home. But we had the blackout, of course, and there was a guy that lived just, I don't know if Ian told you, just up at Tramgheega. Uh-huh. He was in charge, because he was an army man himself. At one time, he used to go round all the houses and tick anybody off that had any chinks of light.
Even on Mull,
coming through the blinds because the Germans would be able to spot it. Yeah, it was quite funny. He came to us one night because one of our skylights was the blind hadn't been pulled, and I remember my father saying, "All right, we'll go and pull the blinds." So. Yeah, it was quite a scary time, really. But that was in my early childhood, of course. Mm. Once the war finished, of course, there was a celebration.
How was it celebrated in Mull? Yeah,
I seem to remember if it's the same celebration, but my memory is not that good. There was a celebration at Turlosk in the big. That's the only time I've ever been at the grand house there.
Yeah.
And my father was quite musical, and he played the fiddle and he played the accordion. And he and several other guys that played, Johnny Simpson, he played the fiddle, and one or two others played things. And they went across there to play, and everybody was invited, even the 5-year-olds, you know. And I can remember the lady of the house sweeping down the stairs in a beautiful royal blue gown, you know.
I'm ready for my close-up, Mr.
Making an entry. Yeah. And we were all down below, you know. And it was, and quite a lot of people seemed to be there, if I remember rightly. I remember that.
Do you remember your dad coming home from Tyree as well?
Yes, I do remember that.
What was that like, having
him? Oh, it was good to see my dad coming home from Tyree. Once he brought me a doll. This was when my mum and I we were staying in Tobermory as she was teaching there. Mm-hmm. And Pushley brought me this doll. And in those days, dolls had china heads.
Yeah.
And he gave it to me, and I had it on the table. We were living up at a place called Dramard,
mm-hmm.
where Duncan McGilp's people used to live there. And I didn't know that if you dropped the doll, that was the end of the doll. And I dropped it on the stone floor. It was really awful. And the poor dolly's head broke. Because we had very, very few toys, you know. I think I had two toys. I had a little doggy thing that somebody brought, one of the guys that were working down at Calgary Castle. There were soldiers or people living there anyway.
Yeah.
And that guy got friendly with my parents, with my dad and my mum, and he brought me a dog, a sort of hairy dog thing.
Lovely.
And we had no books either, you know, hardly any books.
Goodness me.
Well, there was nothing during the war. Everything just disappeared. Didn't seem to have things at all, hardly. It was awful.
Mm-hmm.
Apart from, well, when I went to school, of course, I had books. I remember I got one book, and it was strange. It was from a party at Dervig, and it was about a rabbit who was a teacher. She was called Dame Slap, believe it or not.
Wow.
And I thought this book was fantastic, you know. So I really cherished that book. And all her students were hedgehogs and mice. And
lovely.
It was a lovely book. And it really made me aware of all these little animals, you know, which was good.
That's great.
So I remember that.
You also grew up with Gaelic as well, didn't you?
Well, both my parents spoke Gaelic. But the problem was, when I went to school, there was hardly anybody that could speak Gaelic there. They were all incomers, really, most
mm-hmm.
of them.
Mm-hmm.
And you couldn't speak it in the playground. And the other thing was that, if Gaelic had been mandatory or something, you know, we would all have been taught Gaelic. Now, my mother could have been teaching us Gaelic in the school.
Yeah.
But, of course, I suppose she wasn't. It wasn't on the curriculum, which was terrible, really, when you think about it. But then, not so long before then, Gaelic had been banned in the schools. You know, the children had to be taught through the medium, through English, and they didn't want that, and most of the teachers were English speaking, you know, they weren't Gaelic speaking. Although my predecessor, she was Gaelic speaking, but then she was old as well. She was there till she was about, I think she must have been in her middle 60s before she retired. But
that's amazing. That's
mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We'll come back more to teaching in a moment. I'm keen to kind of find out a little bit more about your mum and dad. Can you say what was your dad like? Could you describe your dad to us?
Well, my father was a very easygoing, placid person.
Well,
he would not be rattled by anybody practically. He was that kind of person. Which was, you know, they say that opposites attract, but he and my mother were real opposites, because my mother was completely different. She was, you know, a really quite a fiery person, you know, but my dad was, would put up with practically anything. he was really good, but of course, my mother was the sort of person who could get things done, you know.
Yeah.
That's the kind of people you need for.
So, did you know your grandparents at all?
I didn't meet any of them.
Right.
Which is.
Well, your mum's.
A sore part, because my mother was the youngest of her family of. I think there were 9 or 10 in the family in Skye.
Yeah.
And my father was the youngest of 5. But. Because I was the youngest, they were all although my grandfather lived till he was 93, believe it or not, he was gone before I was born. So that's one thing that I really regret, because I think that the link, you know, that you get between you and your grandparents is quite precious.
Your dad, and he had lots of interests in terms of music as well, you were saying, yeah.
Yes.
What do you remember of that?
I remember quite a lot about that because they used to have dances in the little hall, which is now a shop in Dervig.
Yeah.
And he and this guy called Johnny Simpson, when he came back from the war, he had been a prisoner of war, and when he came back, he and my father used to play at these dances, and Johnny Farquharson, I think he played as well. And there might have been others, I can't remember. But they used to have these Saturday night hops, and they played at the dances.
Fantastic.
And they played for free. I mean, they just went in and played all night, and that was it, you know, and everybody enjoyed it. That's the way it was. So that was quite good. So he was keen on music. And then we had, for a time, we had a Gaelic choir in Dervig, believe it or not. Mm-hmm. Ella McKenzie, she was, you possibly knew Alison Bartholomew, did you? Uh-huh. Well, Ella McKenzie was her mother, and she was one of the Macleods of Dunvegan, actually. She was extremely musical, Ella McKenzie, so was the daughter, but she used to have this choir, and my father was in that, and I was in it, even as a youngster. And in fact, we had a choir in Dervig, we had a choir in Tobermory, we had a choir in Salon, and we had a choir in Bennessen, Gaelic choir. Would you believe that?
I can, yeah, totally.
Yeah.
What was it like? Was it nice being together and singing?
Yes. I think it was good for people. It got people together that were interested in music anyway.
Are there any songs from that period that you remember that you don't hear now on the radio so much?
I can't really remember any special ones because they were... because they had a little mod, which they still have in Tobermory, there was a kind of list, you know, that you did every year, and they were very much the same as what they are now, to be honest.
And the area, so the area around Penmore was quite populated when you were younger as well. There's quite a few folk around, I believe. Can you say, they're relatively... more people came in. Can you say about who was there, and like Mary Flora and people and her family or her son, and who were the people that were there?
Yeah, well, there was Mary Flora. Her son was Dolechin. He was away in the war, of course, until 45. And then there were people in Drumfinagall. That's where the Galbraiths are now.
Who was there?
There was a Neil Patterson there, and his mother. They were old by this time. I called her. Oh no, it wasn't. He wasn't a Patterson. I beg your pardon. He was a Beaton, and I called her Granny Beats. And I escaped one day when I was very young, about four, and I went down there. My parents were just about going spare looking for me. I trackled down there and climbed walls and all the rest of it.
Wow.
And I knocked at the door and I said, I've come to visit Granny Beats and I want a cup of tea.
I know where I'm going. Wow.
So I remember that quite well because we had loads of cats at the mill, and
really,
one cat came with me. And I remember that cat when I was climbing over quite a high wall. I don't know, I got up the wall and I got down the wall, and this cat was sitting on the wall watching me all the time. Would you believe that? Cats are very intelligent creatures.
Yeah, I'm very fond of them. We've got three and they're just the best.
Do you like them?
I love them, yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah,
a lot of people, they either like cats or they hate cats,
yeah.
I think.
No, I'm very much in the cat camp.
Anyway, that was who was living there then. Now, he had been in the First World War, Neil Beaton. He was in what they call the Scottish Horse. I don't know if you've heard of it.
Now, I know the tune, the Scottish Horse. There's a tune, I'm sure, the Scottish Horse. What was the Scottish Horse?
Well, it was part of the... They must have sent them out, I suppose. He didn't go out to France, I don't think, but horses did go out to France,
yeah.
You know, and you've probably seen that film about... what was the name of the horse?
War Horse.
Yeah. War Horse, yeah. Yes. The name of the film, I should say.
Mm.
War Horse. And they had a tough time there, yeah. You know, the poor horses. My father had a horse that he used for taking coal from Croig round to places, because a coal boat used to come into Croig, I believe. He was called Dick. I think he was had actually been in the First World War, Dick, and come back, and he was shot by accident.
Oh dear.
Two guys, one of them my aunt's husband and another guy, thinking it was a deer, he was shot, but my father was very upset about that.
Oh, so he died with this?
The horse died, yes.
Oh dear.
Mm-hmm. Well, there was a stable there. You probably know where the stable was, you know, on the right hand side of the mill house.
Oh yes.
There's
sir.
The remains of a, what we call in Gaelic, a larach of a stable,
mm-hmm.
and that's where any horses were kept. I remember going to ploughing matches. You're talking about things my father did with my father, and they used to have a ploughing match sometimes over at Queenish.
Yes.
But you've probably heard about that.
No, please say more, yeah.
Well, there was a ploughing match there, and they used to dress the... I always remember the horses used to get ribbons put in their mane and all the rest of it, and they looked really nice, and their tails were dressed up with ribbons and all this kind of thing.
Beautiful.
I mean, I found it a bit boring because, you know, watching a man plough. But, it was an experience, you know.
Where were the races themselves? Were they out past the house, beyond in the fields over there? Where were they?
There was a big field at Queenish. I can't remember if it's still a field or if there's trees in it or whatever now. You know, there was a big, quite a big field there anyway.
Right.
I think it was behind the house somewhere.
Right.
If I remember rightly.
The poor horse, that's a real shame if he got shot. That's, yeah.
Yeah, well, my father was very upset about it because I think he had been in France, that horse.
Yeah.
I think he had.
There's an area at Croig, the Oogak.
Yes.
I've always found that really interesting because it's kind of sort of muddy, kind of silty, but.
That's right.
Place. What do you remember of that when you were a child? Was there a house over the other side? What was there?
I just remember Croig House, of course.
Ah, yeah, who was there?
There were a family of MacPhails there.
Ah?
Uh-huh.
Right.
Yes, and they must have been farming that part at that time,
mm-hmm.
I think. Whether they leased it from Penmore at that time, I think they would have, because that was not a big estate, quite a small estate really at that time. But the Oogak, I remember that well enough because my father and I did a lot of things with my father because I was the only one and at that time till Ian came along, and I used to go out fishing with him a lot.
Oh wow.
And we went away out to Skervor. Do you know where Skervor is?
The one sticking out from kind of the bay at the sort of to the west of the bay.
Oh no, northwest. It's way much further out than that.
Oh.
Way out opposite Queenish Point.
Oh.
Skervor.
Okay, right.
You only see it at low tides.
Right.
And we had a rowing boat, and we used to row out there and fish with... Is there still a shed at Croig?
Kenny's, that's where Kenny's.
Oh, that's where they'll keep their stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, we had bamboo rods in there, and we used the bamboo rods for fishing.
Mm.
After a time, we got these long lines.
Oh, yes.
Which, they were awful when you caught mackerel. You know, if you came in a shoal of mackerel, you could be pulling in about 8 or 10 fish, and that was an experience,
yeah.
which I didn't much like.
Yeah.
But We did a lot of that, my father and I. My mother didn't go out in the boat at all. She wasn't that keen on small boats. But it was quite an experience.
What was it you were catching? Was it mostly mackerel that you caught at that
time? We caught lythe as well.
Right.
And these big, what do you call them, grey fish.
I always get confused. There's piuchgich.
It would be piuchgich.
Aye, yeah.
Yes, that's what we call
it. I can't remember what you call them in English. Is it coal? Is that coal or is that lythe? I forget. Yeah.
What's the name of the big one that's got...
Seith.
I think it would be a seith.
Aye.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, so I don't think that's
right.
You're painting a really clear picture of a wee girl with her dad. That's fantastic.
Yes. I did a lot with my father. We in those days, of course, you just had wood fire, so we needed wood all the time, you know, to keep the fire going. And we had no electricity until I was about 11 or 12. And believe it or not, this part of the world here, when I took over in 68 over there, my predecessor, right up until I came, had gas for lighting in the school. So can you imagine what that was like?
A lot of sleepy people. But,
must have been awful. And fortunately, the year I came, electricity had come to this part. You see, they had the dam at Tobermory, of course, and they ran electricity for the north part of the island off the dam at Tobermory. But this part of the island was way behind that. Very far behind it, actually, when I think about it. I remember we had tilly lamps, which was a bit of a nightmare because of the...
Yes,
plus...
The mantle.
The mantle would fall apart with a wind. Then you'd have no,
it was a
no
lovely
light. It was really awful.
But it was a lovely light, the tilly light. It was really,
yes, it was
really
nice,
something.
Nice light. And we had candles, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And some rich people had, we had little lamps, but we didn't have an Aladdin, you know, one of these big fancy lamps. I think you only got those in the big houses, you know.
There's one that my grandfather had, and I have no idea where it came from at all. I need to ask my mum.
An Aladdin, one of the big Aladdins. Lovely lamp.
Gorgeous thing, yeah, but I just remember mum cleaning it with Brasso when I was a kid, and I was off school one time with sickness. And the smell of Brasso still to this day turns my stomach. I
quite
taste
believe
it. Oh, it's horrible.
Well, it's not a nice smell.
Oh, no. Yeah.
That's right.
We haven't mentioned your mum too much. I'm conscious that your mum, there's lots of kind of, there's archive stuff of your mum as well, isn't there, talking
about? There is quite a lot.
What was she like, Mary? What was she like, your mum?
She was... I would say she was a very clever person, you know, not in the sense of being a fantastic housewife or baker or anything like that, but her academic knowledge was good. And she read, she was very well read.
Brilliant.
She read a lot of books. In fact, she used to get really annoyed with me because she said I didn't read enough. But then I had four children, you know, and a lot to do. I didn't get into the habit of reading like her because I didn't have the time. She seemed to have more time than I had, or she made time, I should say. You know, so she was a real academic, really, you know, which I wouldn't count myself as one at all, but she was. She was very quick-tempered. She would flare up quite quickly. But then she would forget it just as quickly. You know, she wouldn't nurse her wrath kind of thing or anything like that. So in that respect, she was okay. I wish she had insisted on my brother and I doing more about Gaelic, really. Maybe she did more with Ian because, of course, he did go away early, too early. He went away to Oban at 11.
Mm.
But I was at Tobermory School. And I got home at the weekends. But then I was listening to English all the time, yeah. you know, while I was there, and getting further and further removed from Gaelic. Although I did do Gaelic at school, right enough, but that's another story.
When you stayed in Tobermory, were you always in Dromard, or were you staying elsewhere when you were there?
No, when I was in Diggs in Tobermory, first of all, I stayed with a couple in Rockfield Road, who were both nice people, but they didn't get on very well, and I was in the middle of it, so I didn't stay there very long.
That's tricky.
And I went to stay with an old lady at Craigspear Terrace, and she was very nice.
Oh, what was her name?
Mrs. Donald. And she had, her people had come in when they introduced a lot of fishermen to Tobermory.
So one of the Tronsich from Montrose or somewhere like that?
Yes, they would have come from the East Coast.
Aye.
She was actually a Yule.
Oh, yes, yeah.
And
yeah.
the Yules, I think you would find they would come from the East Coast.
Yeah.
Yeah. She had married somebody, Donald, but he was gone by the time mm-hmm. we were there. Mm-hmm. She'd made a good job of her family. I mean, one of her family went to Aberdeen University and graduated. The other one was a nurse in London. And her son, he was in the army, and I don't know, he didn't seem to come home very often. But she looked after us well, so...
That's lovely.
Yes, so...
Before we leave your youth on Mull, who were the characters that you looked forward to encountering when you were younger? And Dervig, Croig, Terloisk and Tobermory, who were the characters that would be that you thought, oh, here we go, this is someone interesting to talk to?
To actually talk to.
Or just see about.
Yes. Well, I used to go to the shop in Dervig. There was a shop at... Glen Bellart, you probably know all about that.
Boom.
I used to like to talk to them because I could get, sometimes they gave me sweets.
Oh, what were their names?
McDonald's. Right. They were all McDonald's. There was two spinsters and a brother. None of them married, I don't think. One of them, another sister married, and they also, their niece had a shop in Tobermory, a Swedish shop in Tobermory, where next to the museum.
Yes, yeah.
So that was a favourite place, you know, once there were sweeties and we could get them. I mean, sweeties were rationed during the war, you know, so yeah. we used to go to that shop. So I used to like to go to the shop and have a conversation with the wee lady in the shop. For obvious reasons.
Yeah. Why, the weather today? Yeah. Yeah.
I have to say I liked the wee lady that taught us music. That was Ela McKenzie I was telling you about that did the choir, because she took quite an interest in anybody that seemed to have a wee bit of an ear for music, which I seemed to have at that time. She took quite an interest in me. And she even gave me a violin, but... When I went away, I was trying to learn the violin, but then I went to school in Tobermory, and then I went on to Oban, and the whole thing fell apart, of course. So that was that. But no, I liked her. I'm trying to think of any other people.
You mentioned Johnny Simpson. What was he like?
Yes, he played the
fiddle.
I didn't have much to do with him, really, to be honest. My father, he was a friend of my father's, and he went and played with him, you know, at the village hall and that kind of thing. We used to go down to visit a family called the Galbraiths at Langamill at one time, and they were characters, the man and wife. They had, I think there were eight... Or were there more in that family? She was a very good baker. Again, it's terrible going back to this stomach thing. But
oh, that's how you remember things. Yeah, yeah.
When you're a child, these are the sort of things.
Yeah, oh, we're going there, you're a dancer, yeah.
You know, so any time we went to visit, she always used to have lots of lovely cakes. Her daughter made cakes as well, and they were quite interesting people. He was a farmer, of course, and they always had yarns, you know, about the farm. They farmed Langamill at the time, And that was quite interesting. I think they had come from Ayrshire.
Right.
Galbraiths, I think they were Ayrshire originally. And the sons, of course, took on, once they were old enough, they helped in the farm. And I don't know what's happening with that place now.
It's lived in. It's yeah. There's a lovely couple that are there. And,
right. That's good.
They're not farming it, but they're mm-hmm. artists.
Yes.
And I think the Steadings are used as their studios, which is great.
Good.
Because I remember Ian talking about Kayleigh's and the Steadings at Langemall.
Right.
And seeing how brilliant that was as well.
Yes. Good. Yeah, good. Yeah. But I remember them and. I'm trying to remember who else. Oh, yes, I remember a guy called Sandy McIntosh. He lived down at Carrioch, he and his wife. And they had sheep out on, or he had something to do with these sheep out on the Treshnish Isles.
Goodness.
And oh. I remember Sarah Bray, she was called, you know. Mm-hmm.
Jim Spence's,
yeah. That was his mother. And I was friendly with her because she used to stay at Benmore House
yes. With
her aunt and uncle.
Yeah.
And we were in our teens, we went out to help with these sheep once.
Wow.
And that was quite an experience because they had to watch that the sheep didn't go over the cliffs.
Yeah.
You've probably been out the Treshnish.
Yeah.
And there's some out, and we went to Lunga.
Yeah.
And the cliffs are pretty steep there, you know, so...
They really are.
It was quite an experience. And this guy had very good dogs, which he used, Sandy McIntosh, to... He seemed to be good with sheep, this guy. He looked after the sheep out there, and they had to try and take some of them in too. They didn't do it the day we were there, mercifully, because that must have been quite an experience, you know.
To get them from high ground onto the shore.
Yeah, and then you would have to tie their legs and get them onto a boat. But there's no sheep out there now, to my knowledge, or anything like that. But that was, I remember that was quite an experience when I was in my teens, I remember it. And Commander Mackenzie, who was the husband of Ayla Mackenzie, the lady I spoke about, he had a motorboat and he took us out.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But it was a good day, fortunately. It wasn't rough or anything, so it was really good.
Where was Commander Mackenzie's...
Well, I won't say too much about this, but his people had what we termed Calgary Castle.
Okay, right.
Way back.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was the first job that my father ever had because his people came from round Terloshk-Enzi area. And his first job was with the Mackenzies. And I think they were quite hard taskmasters because he wasn't terribly happy there, you know. He eventually, of course, he wasn't working there. He was doing his own thing. But... they had, my mother, strangely, she came to Mull first. My uncle was minister at Salon.
Yes.
And she came to visit him. Of course, in those days, the landowners used to invite the minister, you know, to the castle or the big house. And she and my uncle were invited there once. And she told me all about it. The lady of the house, when she came in for the afternoon tea, all the family and everybody had to stand up and, you know, nod and whatever, and until she sat down, and then everybody sat down and they had their afternoon tea. So they had to really behave themselves.
I'd be making fart noises. In the background, that's what down to that sort of thing.
Yeah. But they were the original Mackenzies that were there. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether David Tennant, he had relatives that came from Mull.
That's right, over the other side there, in Calgary, the village above Calgary Bay, yeah.
Was that where his people came from?
Inivay or somewhere like that. One of the
he
ones
was a MacLeod. They were MacLeods, I think.
Right, okay. Because his real name is MacDonald. His family name, but I think
was it MacDonald?
Well, I can't remember. You might be right in saying that because it was Meg Douglas talks to him in the we watched it just recently, but yeah, his, I know his own name is David MacDonald, but I don't know if that's how he comes from Northern Ireland, if I remember rightly, or something like that. But so the MacLeods were there as well in that.
MacDonnell, that's a Northern Ireland, Irish name.
Aye.
Yeah. Yes, I remember Meg saying that she had a Christmas card from him.
Oh, nice.
And he said, this is from you know who.
Oh, lovely.
Uh-huh, which seems is like very a good guy. Kind.
Yeah.
Yes.
Let's now come to your time away from the island then. What was your first step off island?
I suppose going to Oban. I remember as a child going to Oban with my parents. We went there very rarely because when I was really small, you had to have, what did they call it? You had to have a special, not a licence, it was called something else. And you had to present, there was, you know, they had to know exactly who was coming and going on boats at that time. And I do remember there being quite a fuss because my father had mislaid his one.
Oh, no.
What do you call these things? Was that a kind of visa?
A visa was what I was going to say, yeah.
But it had another name then.
Passport?
No, it was something else.
Literally to the passport.
Anyway, I remember there being quite a fuss about this because my father couldn't find his, and I think he had to say to the purser or whoever was on the boat, they had to vouch for the fact that he was who he was, you know. And of course in those days we caught the boat usually, I think, at Tobermory. We caught it at Tobermory or Salon because you didn't have Craignure Pier.
No.
So but that's another very long story that I could talk about.
The building of Craignure Pier, or?
Well, how it all came about, really.
Well, I know particularly John Maughan and other friends, Charlie Hogg as well, were very interested in that as well. So, yeah, if you want to say about the
building. Well, they probably know it all.
But, well, it's worth saying. Well, again,
when I worked in the Western Isles Hotel as a student, I suppose, at that time, a man called, they called him Cameron Sunderland, that he was a Cameron from, his people were from Tobermory.
Hmm.
And he used to come to the hotel with the mayoress of Newcastle. She was his friend.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know this story already?
Not at all, never heard this, no.
Well, she used to come with him, and they used to stay for quite a time in the Western Isles Hotel.
Lovely.
And he was, I think he was a director of Binns, which later became Fraser's, which doesn't exist now.
Ah, right, okay.
A pretty famous place in Edinburgh.
Yeah.
A shop.
Yeah.
He used to, he was quite a character. He was a bit crabbit, actually, because he was getting on by this time. And he used to have porridge every morning, and the way he ate his porridge, he got the porridge in a bowl of cream. Don't know if you've ever seen this.
No.
And he'd dip his spoon into the bowl of cream, then into the porridge, and eat it that way.
Whoa.
And that had to be brought up, his bowl of porridge and his cream. Sometimes he came without the mayoress.
Right.
Because I don't know what the situation was there. I don't think they were married, but anyway, that's another story. Then I think he thought he should get the freedom of, for some unknown reason, the freedom, have you heard this story before, of Tobermory? You know there's such a thing as getting the freedom of a city.
Yes, yeah.
Uh-huh. And he thought, he had a nephew, John Cameron, who was very nice, and later on owned the Craignure store.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he wasn't given the freedom of Tobermory, Cameron, of Sunderland. And he said, right, he said, I've got some spare cash, 50,000, it will go somewhere else on the island. It would have gone to Tobermory, and they might have been able to build perhaps the sort of pier they needed, but he said, no, it will go somewhere else. So they needed money at that time because they were trying to negotiate the building of Craigmuir Pier, and he said, right, here's 50,000, and that went towards, which was a lot of money then.
Of course.
That went towards building of pier. So.
That makes a lot of sense. Yes, I've heard that tale in parts before, but that's amazing. Yeah. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's how the pier came along.
Yes.
And very very conveniently, his nephew's shop was just close by as well.
Well, I think John probably. We were quite friendly with the Camerons because I had Johnny Cameron, his nephew's daughter in the school, Kay.
Right. Right.
She was a smart girl, very smart girl. John Cameron bought the shop, that's right, and he and Jetta, his wife, ran it for some years.
I love the name Jetta, you don't hear that very often at all.
Yes. Right. And then once they retired, they went to Oban, and that piece of furniture there, they didn't want to take it away, and they offered it to Wallace and I. They said, would you like this sideboard? We really don't want it, we'd like you to have it.
That's lovely.
And fantastic. They gave us that sideboard.
That's superb.
And I know it takes up a lot of space, but I do love it just the same.
Exactly that, yeah.
Yeah.
You were a student working in the Western Isles. Where were you as a student? Were you?
I was at Murray House College in Edinburgh. I went to Murray House.
I used to work for Murray House.
Did you?
I was, yeah, I was when I was 21 to about 24, I used to do summer schools for them, with activities with young people in drama. And
great.
It was great fun. I loved it. Yeah, they're now part of Edinburgh University, of course. I think they were then as well, actually, of course. But yeah, so can you tell us about Murray House? What did you study at Murray House?
Well, purely to teaching and going out to schools. We went out, I was there for 3 years, and we went out nearly every term teaching to various schools in Edinburgh.
Wow.
So, you know, I had experience in quite a lot of the schools. Rough and smooth, you know.
Yes, totally. Yeah.
It was quite an experience. It was good, you know. It was really good.
Where did you live when you were in Edinburgh?
Mostly in the West End.
Oh,
West
very fancy.
In Buckingham Terrace.
Oh, aye. Lovely. Wow.
Not Buckingham Palace.
But still.
Buckingham Terrace on the other side of the. You'll know it well.
Yeah.
Other side of the Dean Bridge.
Oh, it's a bit of a trek to college.
It was a trek when you only got £25 a month of a grant.
Goodness.
To survive, and your room was £3 a month.
Yeah.
No, £3 a week, sorry.
Oh, jinx.
So that was £12 a month. So
yeah.
It was the rest of that was food and bus fares. And a lot of the time I walked to college.
When I lived in Edinburgh, I used to walk everywhere as well.
Yes.
I loved it. I love walking in Edinburgh. It's just so interesting. I lived in Jeffrey Street for quite a while, and which is above the.
Oh, I know where that is. Yes, it's very near Murray House.
It's just around the corner from Murray House.
That's
exactly.
Right.
Yeah. You would probably take it to get up there, actually, underneath the bridges and all that.
Yes.
I walked to Leith every day with that.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, that's good. A trek.
It was great. You know, it was fine. That was 2 years or two of that. It was a year. It was great. I loved it.
It was an old building, Murray House.
Yeah.
I take it was purpose built. I don't know.
Presume so. Yeah.
Uh huh. But yeah. It was really old. It became part of Heriot Watt. I think the Heriot Watt University eventually.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's now Edinburgh University that I think have it now. So
do they have it?
I think mm-hmm. so. Yeah. Certainly, they were my employers for when I was there. Yeah, and did you enjoy Edinburgh? What was that Edinburgh like for social life?
It was good. I liked Edinburgh very much.
What
yes.
Did you go to Lothian Road, go to the ABC and see the pictures there? Or what did you do?
Well, there were a lot more picture houses there.
Mm.
In those days, there was the... I'm trying to think. There was one down Leith Walk.
Oh, yes.
Was it the Dominion or the...
Dominion's up in
no, that was up Lothian Road, was it?
Yeah, Dominion is in Morningside. Yeah.
Yes, I'm trying to remember the names of them all.
Yeah.
There was a playhouse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that was originally a proper picture house.
Yeah, massive place, yeah.
Yeah, that's quite big. Of course, it's still on the go, isn't it?
Yeah, it's one of the biggest stages in Europe.
Now, I'm trying to think of the Lyceum.
Mm-hmm.
And
Grindley Street, yeah.
That's right. And what's the one on the opposite side? It's still going.
Usher Hall or
Lothian Road.
Or the King's.
And there was the tiny wee one at Toll Cross. It's still there, I think.
Oh yes, the Cameo.
Cameo.
That was a purpose-built cinema.
That was a very
beautiful. I love it.
Intimate kind of cinema.
Oh,
small.
I love it. Yeah.
Uh huh. Yeah, I was in there quite a few times.
Probably my favourite cinema in Edinburgh. I know there's a lot of... I love the Film House, and they were my employer for a long time, but Cameo for me was...
Yeah, I remember the Cameo.
It was great.
So, it's still... Is it still going?
Cameo's still going, yeah.
Yes, I went to the cinema when... Sometimes somebody else had to pay my due if there was a boyfriend with a bit of money. Things like that.
My first ever date was at the Cameo.
Probably and, would be.
Yeah. I remember I met a lovely Norwegian girl, and we arranged to meet there, and it was midnight movie.
Oh.
And I think I've probably said this before, and we met there, and it was Casablanca.
Oh, yes.
Which I love, one of my favourite films.
Yes.
And we both fell asleep. And the partner comes in, that was very nice, thank you, goodbye. Never saw each other again. That was my way with girls for a long time. Thank you very much. Goodbye. you met Wallace in Edinburgh, talking things romantic.
Yes, I did meet Wallace in Edinburgh. That was more towards the end of my time at college.
How did you meet him?
I met him in, strangely enough, Young Street.
Ah, fantastic.
Gosh, you know my name's Young.
Yeah.
He used to go to... The guys from the Borders used to go quite a lot to the Highland things, you know,
mm-hmm.
because they were in digs. He did all his apprenticeship for electronic engineering with Ferranti, and these guys were in digs, you know, and...
Yeah.
I don't know whether they had that kind of dancing and stuff like that in the Borders, but they seemed to go to a lot of the chuchter, as we call it, which I shouldn't use that word. I hate the word, but they did call them the chuchter dances, you know, in Edinburgh. And the other place I went to was the Leith Town Hall.
Oh,
used
yeah.
to have dances there.
Wow.
Went there. Oh. Young Street, I think that was a Masonic Hall at one time.
Gosh.
And went there.
And what did you think?
The Highland Annual. Do they still have the Highland Annual?
I'm not sure.
They used to have that at Leith Town Hall.
Right.
And they used to have the boxing rings down there, I think.
And could you describe, what did you think when you met Wallace for the first time?
I shouldn't really talk about this, but when I met Wallace the first time, he asked me for a dance, and I had a dance. Then he came up for a second dance,
wow.
and I said, no thanks. I don't make a habit of dancing two times in a row with the same person.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm. Good Glasgow's girl.
He came up. The next time he came up again. So I thought, oh, all right, you know. So that's how I met Wallace.
Wow.
Uh-huh. So we made a date at Binns. What was Binns was by this time Fraser's, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Where
ironically,
most people met. And this is quite a funny story, actually, because I went to meet him at... I came from the West End, of course, from Buckingham Terrace, I think it was at the time, and there were two guys. Wallace wore a raincoat, and there were two guys standing at Fraser's with beards and raincoats.
Oh my goodness.
And I thought,
which one?
It was quite tricky. as far as I know, I chose the right one. Yes, I did. Because he stepped forward, you know. So. But when I was approaching, these two guys were there.
Yeah.
And they were so alike. It was
That's really scary.
It was really quite amusing.
That's a sliding doors moment. You could have gone one way or the other. Yeah. Oh, gosh.
So that was it. So I remember that one of the first dates we went on was to the Cameo.
Oh, yeah.
But I'll tell you who was with me. I didn't take her for, you know,
moral support.
Chaperone or anything like that. But, you know, Elizabeth MacPhail?
Yes,
She was working in Edinburgh at the time.
Gosh.
And I said to her, well, why don't you come along as well? I thought it'd be nice for her to go. She didn't know anybody, to go out with us just to the picture, you know. And she said, okay, I'll come. So
that's lovely.
The three of us trotted off to the Cameo.
And where did you start your married life then? How did that?
In Edinburgh.
Right.
Yes.
Where did you get married?
In Cumley Bank.
Oh, nice.
Got married in Dervig.
Right, okay. At the village hall or at
church there, yes. And we had our reception was in the Belcroy Hotel.
Lovely.
And we had a dance in the village hall that was there then. It was just a small hall then.
And Wallace, is he from Gala Shields or was he?
He was from Moffat.
Moffat, okay.
Moffat in Dumfriesshire.
Oh, there. Ah, right, okay.
Yeah.
And did his folks come up as well for the wedding?
Well, his father was dead by this time. His father had come through the Second World War. He was in the North African campaign.
Oh, wow.
When they were with Montgomery.
Monty and me.
Fighting, what's his name?
Rommel.
Yeah, he came through that. And a lot of these guys, he died at 58.
Oh, that's very young.
It was even younger than my father, who hadn't been to the war.
Yeah.
But a lot of these guys came through a very tough time.
Yeah.
No, he wasn't alive when we got married. Mm-hmm. But his mother was. She attended the wedding.
What did you think? What was it like having a mother-in-law? I was just saying about my mother-in-law, how lucky I was with Jackie. I couldn't have wished for better. But what was it like, I guess, a mother-in-law at a distance?
It was quite handy having one at a distance. She was all right. She was good-hearted, you know. She had foibles, which I won't go into. But she was a good-hearted person. She was a damn good cook. Very good cook. And she worked in, I don't know, do you know Moffat? She worked
really
in the Balmoral Hotel.
Okay.
She cooked there and for the people there. And she was good at it. And she was a very good baker as well.
And so you were in Edinburgh. Was that where the family were born?
Only Charles was born in Edinburgh.
Right.
He was born in the Western General in Edinburgh.
Mm.
And we were married in... the 8th of August 1967, and he was born in June 29th, 1968. But we lived in Edinburgh and taught in Edinburgh.
Yeah. Where were you teaching at that time?
Do you know, you know Edinburgh well?
Ah, yeah.
Muir House was where I taught for a few years.
Wow. That would have been an interesting night.
That was an interesting place to teach. And I taught 43 children.
Oh, that's a huge number.
A huge class for one of the years I was there. And it was hard work, I can tell you.
Yeah.
You know, there were three stages in the class.
Oh, my goodness.
There had to be.
Composite, yeah.
It had to be composite within the class because you had the people that, you know, were forging ahead, the people in the middle, and you had the people that were
trailing behind.
Nothing wrong with them, but
just taking their own time.
They had to go slowly, you know. So it was pretty hard work, a hard place to be in.
Mm-hmm.
It was hard, you know. The children, a lot of the children were not very well looked after, you know.
Yeah.
It was quite a shame.
Yeah.
But there wasn't an awful lot you could do about it.
Just make that time better for them, if you could.
Yes, when they were at school.
Yeah.
That's all you could do.
That's quite in contrast then to your time here.
Well, this was a picnic.
Can you tell me, how did you end up with the job here?
I applied for it and I got it. Maybe they were desperate for a teacher, I don't know.
But was coming home to Mull something you'd always wanted to do?
Well, at the time, my father had just died.
All right. Yeah.
And my mother was on her own.
Ah, right.
And my brother was at sea.
Yeah.
And I was really quite concerned, you know, about my mother. Before then, I nearly went to Canada.
Really?
Yes, to teach, because one of my best friends, who's still alive and older than me, believe it or not, she and another friend of hers went to Canada, and she was there for the rest of her life, really, practically. She's still out there, as I say.
That's brilliant.
But I was going to go, and then my father took ill, and I just felt I had to stay at home, you know, to support my mother a bit.
Yeah.
And that's how I ended up back in Mull, really.
So were you living at the mill and driving down to Loch Don every day, or were you staying at the schoolhouse in Loch Don, or what were you...
No, we were here after Wallace and I got married, and we lived in the schoolhouse.
Okay, yeah, so you weren't, yeah.
Once we got rid of the rats.
No, rats, you mean rats rather than children?
Certainly not children, no. What,
was it infested?
Oh, it was terrible when I arrived there.
How did you get rid of them? Was it poison or was it traps?
We had to get, what do you call the people?
Rentokil.
They had to come in. And do the whole place and the schoolhouse. The whole place had to be done.
Jinx. So the lady that had been the teacher before yourself, what was her name again?
Miss McLaughlin. Uh-huh.
And she'd been there for many, many years.
She had been there. She had been teaching there. She may have been away for a short time, I don't know. I think she must have been there for all of 40 years. She and her brothers, the schoolhouse had a croft, you know.
I didn't know that, right.
Mm-hmm. But it was taken away from them because she didn't bother to register.
Ah, okay.
But they had cattle, and they had creatures there way back.
Gosh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereabouts is the croft? Is it at the back of the
behind
school?
Behind the school, yeah. Behind the school, yeah. And I tried to get it back, but failed.
Yeah.
They wouldn't give it back.
Mm.
It went back to the estate, I think.
Your first year of teaching then, who were the pupils that you remember? As opposed to the 40-odd you had in Edinburgh.
You might know her now. Julie Robb.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Now lives in Dervig.
Ah, okay.
She and her husband bought a house there.
Gosh.
Believe it or not, I think he's English,
mm-hmm.
but she's lived most of her life in England and come back.
Wow.
Back to Mull.
Gosh.
Julie. And she had lovely handwriting as a child. And that's one person I can remember. And there was, I don't know if you know Morag McLaughlin, that works in the shop, at the spa shop.
Okay, right.
Morag.
Yes. Okay.
And her husband Dougie, he's an engineer on the boats. Has been for many years. She came back to Mull. It's a question of remembering the ones that have managed to come back here.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
You know, trying to think who else. An awful lot of people came and went from this area,
yeah.
You know. But these are two that are back.
What do you think the importance of a small school like this, like Loch Don Head Primary is? Why is it important?
Well, I think a small school, it's very much, usually part of the community. Yeah. You know, it's a hub for the community, which the school certainly was here, you know. We did drama and we did various things. We had a Christmas party in the village hall at Christmas, you know, and we did things in the school that the community came into. So I think the link between the community and parents and the children was probably a lot stronger than you would get in the town schools, you know, because obviously you can't get to know every very yeah. well every parent.
40 odd parents, yeah, or yeah, 80 people in total, yeah, or, you know.
That kind of thing, you know, so that's, and I think the one-to-one almost attention which each child can get in a smaller school is very important.
It's nourishing, yeah.
You know.
What was the highest roll call you ever had at school?
It was up to nearly 40. I actually had two children that should have been at secondary school mm-hmm. for a short time that brought the roll up to nearly to 40 at one point.
And was that just you and your own at that point? Or was
no, I did get somebody. Mm-hmm. And I got, I don't know if you remember, Jimmy the Vet.
Oh, yes, yeah, yeah, yeah. Jimmy the Vet, yeah, at Fishnish.
Yes. Eventually I got, his mother was a teacher.
Ah,
she
right.
came in
right.
for half a day. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then they decided, well, at that point I had 28 children.
That's
but they
lot.
Were all, I think every stage was represented from primary one to seven.
Yeah.
And, you know, it was very difficult.
That's a huge amount of work you need to do, yeah.
Well, it was very difficult because, I mean, they were at different stages and you had yeah. to try and cater for, you know, each child as it was going on.
That was amazing.
Yeah. So she came in for a while, Ines Wilson, mm-hmm. and she was very good. She
Jimmy
was very
Wilson,
nice.
Yeah.
And then after that, I got the teacher who had been the head teacher at Iona.
Oh, who was that?
Mary McKechnie.
Okay.
Her father had been the head teacher at Bunessan School for quite a long time. Mm. Well, she wanted to give up Iona because quite often there were storms there and she had her home actually in Bunessan, well, at Ardturn.
Right, okay.
And she tried to commute at the weekends.
Yeah.
And sometimes storms would get up. Poor
yeah.
woman couldn't get backwards and forwards, you know, so it was a
That's
problem.
Not easy, yeah.
So she gave up and she came here. But even then she had to drive from Bunessan
every morning, aye.
Yes, and she didn't like, first of all she had to pass her test because she didn't drive. And then she passed her test. But she didn't like snow at all,
no.
so that became a bit of a problem.
Well,
we used to get quite heavy snow in the glen.
Mm,
and she got stuck going home one night. And fortunately, there was another young lad got stuck as well. I don't know how. He must have walked down to Ardjura. I don't think she could because the snow was thick. Their cars were completely bogged down in the snow.
Wow.
And she had to come and somebody from up there rescued them and she stayed the night with us for the next day.
Yeah.
But the snow, it's amazing how deep it can get up there.
Yeah. Some glen, it must be said, eh?
Yeah. So Mary McKechnie accompanied, helped me there for a few years. And then she retired. And then I had Annie Hickson.
Oh, fantastic,
Annie.
Annie.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
Met. Then Annie Hickson came to Craigmuir, she and Norman, her husband, and she taught for me for a while. And then she went down to Bunessan as acting head for a while.
Yeah.
And then I retired and she came back.
Lovely.
And Fiona Reid was the head teacher for a short time. I don't know if you remember Fiona.
She went to Canada? Or?
Aye, she was in Canada. She and her husband were looking after an island off mm-hmm. Canada at
yeah.
some point.
Yeah, that's fab. Aye. Mm-hmm. Oh, yes, that's... And what year did you retire in?
I retired in 97.
Gosh.
That's a long time ago.
Yeah, you get a good retirement. That's fantastic. Yeah.
Well, because I'm so long lived.
And I find like that is. That's amazing.
But I think anybody should retire by that time. To be quite honest, when they're teaching.
Yeah. Oh no. I think yeah. That's it's a. You need to be on the cutting edge of attention.
You do, and by the time you get to that age, you, let's face it, you're not.
Yeah. You have your own family as well, of course. You mentioned Charles already. Who are and where are the other members of the family?
Well, Ian James, whom we lost, you might know. Yeah. And we missed him terribly.
Of course.
And Charles went to Napier University and he took a degree in finance and business studies. And he got... When he came out from university, it was... Oh, the work was very hard to find.
Yeah.
But eventually, he kept writing every firm in Scotland, I think. And finally, a firm took him on. And they were Dutch, I think. Anyway, he went with them. I'm trying to remember their name. Egon, was it? Mm-hmm. And he was with them for a long, long time. Until, probably about... I can't remember when he moved from them. About 5 or 6 years ago, and he's now with Lloyd's in Edinburgh.
Right.
But he had a pretty good job, but it got to the stage he was in charge of about 20 people, and it was hard work. Yeah. So he took a sidestep.
Good.
Which we were glad about, really.
Life's for living, yeah, definitely.
That's right. Yeah. And he's still doing that. Mm. So that's what, and then he got married, of course, and he's got 2 children.
Fantastic.
And the eldest one, he's doing finance thing now at the moment, and daughter is at Heriot Watt, so that's what they're doing. They live at Kirknewton. I don't know if you know.
Don't know Kirknewton. No.
It's about 13 miles out of Edinburgh.
Right. Okay.
Towards the south, I suppose you would say. That's where they are.
Lovely.
And then Ian James, he became a civil engineer. He did very well. He got a first class honours in civil engineering at Edinburgh University.
Yeah.
And then tragically, he was going off to Australia to work, but he didn't make it, so that was that. And then Meryl, she went to Crammond, to the college there.
All right. What did she do there?
It was a kind of combination of arts and, you need to ask her what it was. Mm. Things like looking after roads and building paths and... Anyway, she seemed to get on all right with that.
Good.
Now she does consultancy and does pretty well on that. Built for paths and... events and all sorts of different things. She worked for she met her husband through the Woodland. Well, he works for the Woodland Trust. Mm-hmm. He's worked for them for a long time in Scotland. He's got quite a good job. That's where she met him, through work. So that's what she does. And the youngest one, she works for, Katrina works for the NHS.
Oh, fab.
Uh-huh. And it's quite a demanding job, I think, she does. For the NHS.
Agus, fachol nhw gael ers yn ychydig rhywch i'r amser galeg. Jay, dy fiach. Jay sy'n ychydig yna, rwyd grot amser galeg yna, jay fi snoc.
Wel, chyn i'r galeg, amser ma.
Och, chyn i'r eitio'r.
Chyn i'r ma glior ys o'n y fi y corog. Sy'n mynd a has, mae'r fi sy'n mynd gynjach yn eis. So that's it.
Ile tanger and son elicard. Corderum covore vi cap de trichela. Tang vorers in the horog. Agus avrocht kuchok. It was, as ever, a delight to spend time with Ailey and chat about her life. I feel very lucky indeed to get to spend time with such lovely people. Now, thank you again to those of you who donated to the project via Ko-fi in the new year. I really appreciate it. I hope you all got the thank you emails I sent through the Ko-fi system. Thank you also to our monthly subscribers. Thanks for sticking with us. I really appreciate it. If you're listening and you wanted to make a donation to the podcast, either as a one-off or a regular, small amount, I'd really appreciate it. Another podcast I listen to says, imagine that you're donating the price of a cup of coffee for a listen. I like that idea, and I try and do the same for some of the podcasts I listen to as well. It takes at least 2 solid days of work to get these episodes out to you, quite often a lot more. So if you wanted to make a donation of any sort, that would be greatly received. You can find out how to do so on the Donate tab on whatwedointhewinter.com, and you can either make a donation through PayPal or Ko-fi. It's Dolly Dimple. If you're a new listener and you wanted to subscribe to the podcast, it'd be lovely to have you along for the ride, of course. Likewise, if you're a regular listener and you'd like to leave a review, that would be amazing. If you want to just leave a star review on any, or even a text review on any platform you listen to the project on, that would be very much appreciated. Well, thank you so much for listening. See you next time. Take care, wherever you are. Shinakate.